okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're gonna make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome to Face Action Jackson. I'm Tim Allen. It's Schmidt Weber on the board. Back from Las Vegas. He'll tell us all about his trip out there. Maddie, are you the lady in the commercial that just wings the stuff at the crap table? All of a sudden, all your numbers like sort of came up.
That never happens for me.
Did you ever see it happen? Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Good morning.
Did you ever see it happen where somebody just got a massive run at the crap table?
I've heard it happen. I mean, you hear the cheering and stuff like that, and it can go on for a while. But no, I've never been at a table where someone gets red hot like that. I've been at the blackjack table where someone's gotten red hot and just keeps winning everything and is betting big every time, and that's fun. But of course, that would never happen to me.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, it actually doesn't have to happen to you. It has to happen to whoever pitching.
Well, yeah, in craps.
Yeah, pitching a die. It's I saw it happen once. I was get a little of this, Kevin. I was actually out at a seminar, and I had to give I was giving a talk at like 11, and then another one to 1. So I basically had to kill time for whatever. So I go down, I grab a iced tea, and I'm playing, like video poker just to kill it. And it wasn't even that many people. You know, it's noon, and it was at the Flamingo. And all of a sudden, I hear this little noise at the crap table, and then a little more, and a little more, and this lady, she's just winging them, and I never saw anything like it. I mean, so I went over. By that time, you couldn't get near the table. I mean, there's no way you were getting a spot. This is at noon, and they came out and they had to. She was all things to all people. She'd throw like 3 points in a row. She'd have like a 4, a 6, and an 8 out there. Then wing like all the numbers except 7. And guys are betting. You know, for those of you that don't know craps, if you put money on the pass line, okay, and then say the dealer throws an 8. Well, the odds there are 6 to 5 versus you winning versus you get the 5 and the other guy gets, the house gets the 6, okay? But you can put money behind the line, which is the only even money bet in Vegas. So say you put $5 on the line. If it's 2 times odds, you get to put $10 behind. So you actually get 6 to 5. But if you just want to bet the 8 or the 6 and not, and don't have the point first, you can put it above the line. If you've ever seen that, Manny, where you put it up on the top numbers, they put it. But that doesn't pay 6 to 5. I think it pays 7 to 6 or something. Or 5 to 4, whatever. It's less. I used to know all this. So but people are putting money up there, and she's getting all the numbers, okay? And so finally she gets, like, everybody else's number. Because also, when you put money on the pass line and your number is 8, you can then put another bet on the come line right away, and if it comes out a 6, and your number is the 6. You can do it again. It's a 4. So you don't have to wait till the other guy, till the deal, or the spinner either wins, spinner, the thrower either wins or loses. So anyway, this lady's getting all these numbers for everybody. Then I'd see some guy put out like, here, give me $10 on like a hard 12, which means a 6 and a 6 has to come up. And she'd wing a 6 and a 6, and that guy'd win it. And she'd keep going on. And then she got the point. All right, so she hadn't thrown a 7 in probably 15 rolls, which is pretty amazing on top of it. Then she throws 3 7s in a row. Then goes right back to doing the other. They had to bring more money out twice. This is at noon, at a crap, when there's nobody even in the casino. The entire place was at that table. I never seen anything like it before or since. And I ended up going back. I had to go, my next speech was 1 o'clock. I had to leave. She could still be there. I never did see her crap out.
She's still rolling.
I mean, literally, I was there, watched it for a half hour. I've never seen anything like that. Usually somebody, you know, like the second point, they're skunked, right? But it happens. I mean, it does happen. For you guys, I'm just mentioning to Maddie. Kevin, did you watch that long Cub game the other day? The one that was like 15, 16.
I'm afraid I did.
Did you? I don't know if you noticed, but since everybody's always, you know, bitching at umpires, I watched like the last 6 innings. I don't think that home plate umpire missed a call. Now, one guy turned around and looked at him. No manager was bitching at him. Whatever, that was one of the most perfect games. I don't know who that guy was. not anybody I recognize, but I don't know if you noticed that, but he every single call was the guy, you know, they had the box up there. He didn't miss one.
Which shows you it can be done. So yes. When you see some of these umpires who are all over the place, it sort of leaves you wondering how they get to continue.
Well, I know from umpires.
I get that it's a really hard job, by the way. Yeah. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm a proponent of, you know, let's let the automation call strikes. It'll be really consistent.
Well, I don't mind the part where you can tell, if being a softball pitcher for way too many years, if somebody is leaning inside on the catcher, you know, basically not getting hit in the head with the ball, usually they'll call the inside part terrific, and the part they really can't see is the outside corner. So probably you're going to get away with a couple inches on the outside corner. But as long as everybody gets away with the same pitch, I think it's, you know, so what? I mean, there's a little bit.
Well, yeah. What drives me nuts is when I see that go for about five innings that way, and then all of a sudden it changes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know, because remember the, it was long before you, Matty, the umpires in the American League always used to wear the outside protector. I don't know why that was, but for years they wore the outside protector more, and the National League wore the inside. So they would always, you know, you see those old movies, you'd see the catcher's face, and right above them was the umpire's face.
Right.
Like the two faces thing. And they would, very rarely would they miss one outside or inside because they were right over the middle of the plate. But they had trouble calling the low pitch because basically couldn't see down there. So wherever the guy can't, now, if you ever notice me at softball, the umpire stands on the inside part, I always work on the outside corner. Because I know if it's close, well, in this league now where you got to hit the mat, you don't get that. But in regular leagues, you work the other corner. Anyway, too much about baseball.
Yeah, I hate hit the mat leagues, too.
Yeah, well,
when you're hitting for a mat.
Yeah.
But, the ball still has to cross the strike zone. And a lot of umpires will, you know, they basically will just call really high arcing pitches that do nothing more than land, you know, just they land on the mat, but they never cross the strike zone.
Right, right.
And that used to drive me nuts. But, you know, I did have a solution. I would swap out my 34-inch bat for one of those, for a big baseball bat back up way in the box and say, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't think it would make that much difference, especially. But when we were still playing the radio league before it disbanded, no radio people. That was the plate was a strike. And yet on Sunday, when we're playing regular softball, the plate is not a strike. And it's amazing when you're batting how you'll screw one of those up. You know, where you'll let one, you know, during the radio league, you'll take one, it'll hit the front of the plate, and it's strike three, and you go, why didn't I just take strike three? And because it's a big difference. Anyway, you still should take strike three.
You just don't take strike three.
Well, I understand that, but that's harder to do in when you start with a 1-1, and then you hit a foul ball, and then you already got strike two, and some crummy pitch comes in, and it nips the front part of the plate, and you're sitting there. It sounds worse than it is. I mean, it's easier to do than it sounds. Let's put it that way, Kevin.
If I get two strikes, I'm swinging at everything.
Go ahead, Matt.
I was just saying, when I get two strikes, I'm swinging at everything.
Well, that's then you don't have to worry about it.
I'm not swinging at everything, but my strike zone always depended on the count. So when I stepped into the box, I had about a 1 foot square strike zone, and then if he threw strike one, then my strike zone got a little bit bigger, and if he threw ball one, I kept that same strike zone, and it would vary by the count, and I was always really conscious of that, about what I was going to hit. And I'm sorry, unless the pitcher was up in the count, I was not swinging at anything other than a great pitch to hit.
Well,
that's how it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the right way to do it. I just when I get two strikes on me, I'm not confident enough that the umpire is going to give me a close call. So anything, you know, unless it's way off the plate, I'm swinging.
Yeah. Hey, on a sports.
Yeah,
note,
I agree. It's softball umpires. They're not the greatest officials in the world.
No.
And some of them are complete meatheads. So, and I can say that now because I'm not playing anymore. So I'm not going to alienate anybody. You know, but if they do take it out on stocks and jocks, well, sorry guys.
Well, Hey, we remiss the other day. Well, hey, because we weren't on Wednesday, unfortunately. We did not mention one of the greatest players that ever played. Gino Marchetti died the other day. And for those of you who, if you ever watched the alleged greatest game ever played, which, of course, by now probably isn't, but the 1957 game between the Giants and the Colts, and how many Hall of Famers were on that field, Kevin? Was it like 15 or something? Some huge number.
It was it's a long list.
Yeah, and they claim that was the title game that essentially it put the NFL made it a national sport, right? Right, Kevin? Isn't that the game that all of a sudden got the huge TV ratings and they never really looked back from that game?
Yeah, they got their they made their bones as an entertainment vehicle then.
Yep, and the Colts didn't. The Giants had like everybody, and they had Big Daddy Lipscomb. They had what's his name? The guy who was the announcer forever, Frank Gifford.
Frank Gifford, yep.
And was it Y.A. Tittle? Must have been Y.A. Tittle.
But I believe it was.
They had, and the other side was basically Johnny Unitas on offense and Marchetti on defense, right? And Unitas beat him, and it was if you ever see it on TV anywhere, watch it. I mean, it's the guys, you know, not as fast as today or whatever, but it was really, really good football game. And you realize how good Johnny Unitas was. I mean, he was,
Well, and there really wasn't, I don't know that there was ever anybody better at running 2-minute drill. There have been some quarterbacks that do that, but if we've seen the same thing with the last two Packers quarterbacks, and Elway was known for it.
Well, Brady for sure.
And even going back to college, Montana was really good at it. And those guys may be able to make a claim that they were as good if you get as Unitas, but they weren't better when it came to giving them the ball with a chance to win the game at the end. And you were just cooked. He was going to take them down the field.
Dick Butkus, have you ever read I think it's the second book, and he talked about at every level of football, if you're willing to study and pay attention, somebody will tip off where the play's gone. Either a lineman who squats lower in his stance when he has to make the key block, or whether it's a back who looks at the hole or whatever. I remember in grammar school, the first thing the coach told the backs, do not look at the hole when you walk back there, because somebody is going to know that's where you're running. And he claims one or two times he played against Unitas, he said his eyes were ice cold. He looked right down the middle of the field. You had no idea where he was throwing, then he turned and throw. And you could never get there in time. Because he had a release, he was, I don't know if he had the greatest arm, he had a quick release, and you could just never, you were always a step slow going that direction because he gave you no clue. Which is, something you would never even think of if you didn't, play a lot of sports. But there's a lot of stuff these guys do that you don't even realize. Because some of these guys, you wonder why somebody, every time they throw the ball, the safety is already running that way and they give up three interceptions that day. It's because somehow you can get away with it in college, I think, Kevin. You can't get away with it in pro. You can't.
Well, even in college, though, I remember seeing it with some people whose analytical capabilities I respect, and there were some games that you saw. I think Virginia Tech was one of them when Notre Dame was playing Virginia Tech, and what's his name, Book would stand up and throw long, and it was totally covered, and that was all baiting him into it. So they gave him a pre-snap read and said, here's what your coverage is going to be, and then they were in something else because they knew exactly what he would do if they gave him a certain pre-snap read. And that would put him into a deep throw, and they knew it was going to put him into a deep throw, so on the fly they were changing the coverage. And, that kind of stuff is a huge part of the game.
Well, when I traded the OEX, once in a while, the coach would come and stand in front of me, which he was always an adventure because he was he was a very talented, but also a very, shall we say, unusual trader. but he had amazing talent. But Coach is a big, huge guy. He played tackle or guard for Illinois. He was the offensive coordinator at Purdue for a while. And when he didn't get the head coach job, he quit and became a trader, of all things. And so one day, sometimes there was a lot of time in the pit to talk, especially around lunchtime. I said, Coach, I was at the Irish game last week, and It seems like the tight end caught a pass, the first pass of the game, and then he didn't catch one the rest of the game, and nobody covered him. He said, well, nobody ever covers the tight end. I go, why? He's because nobody ever throws to him. I mean, he's, you know, some, and then he starts launching into, I said, what about, you know, what are these college quarterbacks? And he said, you tell me the school and I'll tell you how good the quarterback is. And I go, why? And he says, well, because virtually everybody has one, you get one read. So what you just said, Kevin, if all of a sudden the quarterback drops back, the guy at the right end, for lack of a better term, goes running down the field deep and they throw the ball and there's two or three guys there. The chances are there's only one or two people in the pattern. So there's all kinds of people to cover guys, and that's the only guy he's supposed to look at is the only guy he throws to. So that's considered one read. He goes, some schools like Michigan and Purdue and places like that, or not Purdue, he said Michigan and, named about three or four schools, they'll give you two reads. So if that guy's covered, you might come back to the tight end. He goes, those guys are much more difficult to defend. He said there's only like two or three schools, and you could tell them because all the pro quarterbacks come from there, give you three reads. It was the guy at BYU when he was still there, because he was the McMahon school. He was the mm-hmm. Who's the lefty? Sure,
they had, you know, at one point about five quarterbacks in the NFL.
Who was the lefty at the Hall of Fame? It's on TV still. That was his name.
Steve Young.
Yeah, Steve Young. There was a string of about five of them, and he said the other one was Purdue, and Purdue had how many guys for a while? They were all pro quarterbacks.
Yeah, Jim Everett, Drew Brees, yeah. Mark Herman. Yeah, that went on and on.
He said, but it's extremely rare.
And their quarterback started as the quarterback's coach and then was the offensive coordinator, was Bob Spoo, who went to Eastern Illinois and was the head coach there for, like over 20 years. And so he's the guy that gave us Tony Romo and Sean Payton and what's the Bears GM's name? He played for Eastern Illinois.
Ryan Pace, I think Jimmy Garoppolo too.
Yeah, and Garoppolo. Although I think he only played for Bob about 1 year.
I think you're right about that.
But Coach Pace, Coach Namath, wasn't like Coach the daughter coach. He did.
I think Sean Payton came out of Eastern Illinois too.
I said him.
Yep. Oh, you said him. Yeah, I mean, that was, talk about a football factory that doesn't get a lot of recognition.
So did, what's his name?
By the way, Bob was my high school head coach.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That's awesome.
So did Rab Rugay, my builder buddy with the Tripoli. You know him, Eddie. You've met him.
Yeah.
He went to Eastern Illinois. He went to Marist in Eastern Illinois.
Did he play football?
Yeah, he was a quarterback.
Oh, wow.
Well, he got the quarterback job at Marist. Remember, did Marist, in all the years they've been there, they've only had one issue. They had one drug issue, and the guy selling the dope was the quarterback. So they booted him out of school. He was real talented, and Rob got the job, or else he never would have played if the guy didn't get dumped. But then he went out to play at Eastern Illinois. I don't know if he started 3 years or whatever. I never asked him, but they know he got a ride down there, and done very well for himself. Anyway, Kevin, it's a lot of interesting stuff happening in sports. I've been watching some of this.
By the way, before you go, Chief. Speaking of sports, our buddy Joel will join us for a quick hit at 6:35. To preview the Derby. So we'll get 5 minutes of Derby preview with Joel and Kevin and all of us on at the same time.
Well, it's about 100 horses.
Yeah, and then I get to run to the OTB and just do whatever Joel says.
That's right.
Well, did what's it there? The favorite got scratched, huh?
I saw that Omaha Beach got scratched yesterday. I think he was the 12, and he was a lot of people's favorite.
Well, that's I've been watching some of this hockey, Kevin. Did you watch? How good is his goalie in Columbus? I mean,
always good.
Is he incredible or what?
And a hot goalie is everything in the playoffs.
But I don't know if he's just hot. The guy's doing the announcing. I've been watching at home. I can actually listen instead of going up to the Tripoli. Well, first they got Panarin on that team, who's always my favorite Hawks. But the guy's like, we haven't seen a goalie like this in like a really long time. He said he's incredibly flexible and his reflexes are unbelievable and his focus. But I mean, I've seen, you know, guys I thought were awful good at goalies, but he is incredible with it's like he's a, he could go for what's that crazy show, where the guys can bend every which way, one of the, they come around, go around the country in the tents, Cirque du Soleil. It's like he's one of those guys. I mean, he's a contortionist in addition to being incredibly fast, but that's a great series. It's 2-2 now.
Yeah. That's, I think so, yeah. The I was actually talking to my daughter about this while we were watching some hockey a couple nights ago, and I said, you know, I got into the old time goalies and got out some old YouTubes of Glenn Hall.
Without a mask.
You know, watch these guys, no mask. Imagine the focus you had to have when you had no mask.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't even imagine that. It's crazy.
It's nuts. I remember when the first few started wearing masks, and Jacques Plante started putting every time he got hit in the face, he'd draw a mark where the stitches would have been, and it didn't take long for him to fill up the face mask.
Well, our buddy Dr. J was a goalie right about that era in like, high school or something. And he claims that the original masks, you gotta, it doesn't matter if they weren't like the ones today. They actually were a mask that went right on your face, like if you're going out
Was it Freddy Krueger?
Yeah, well, he says if you got whacked in the mask, you got cut anyway. It would explode the skin
underneath. Often enough, yeah. I mean, it saved you a lot, but it didn't save you everything. And the way they used to make them is you had to sit and have a mold made. So, you know, they would pour the mask, make the mask to fit your face.
Well, he got whacked one night, and he's got this cut over his eyeball, and between periods, the hospital's right next door, they take him over. His old man puts like three stitches in it and says, are you ready to go for the third period? We'll put the mask back on. I go, are you any good? He goes, no, I was awful, but I was the only one who played goalie. I'm not so sure that would be my spot.
No, I'm not so sure it would be my spot now.
Yeah,
let alone then.
Yeah, really. I mean, for God's sake. But now these guys got the thing in back. And the weird part is, you see, maybe they fly in and they're less careful. But the goals used to be fixed. There was a big iron thing. They would put the goal down.
The stanchions. Yeah. You know, now they have these rubber things that'll give way. Yeah, in those days, these things were, you know, they'd go about 2 feet into the pipe and they'd and probably a foot down, so it didn't move.
No,
if you crashed into the net, you were breaking, separated shoulder, collarbone injury. You know,
that's
all that kind of
stuff. Bobby Hull hurt his knee. He whacked into the net, right? He hurt him, and then of course the knee injuries in those days didn't really get all that. Hey, you know, speaking of which, we're having a guest on next week, a doctor who does a lot of the they're doing the stem cell stuff, Kevin. And I know, evidently you can harvest stem cells from people. I mean, used to be they tried to use cord blood and things like that, but now I think they can just get them from your regular. We'll find out more next week. But it's approved in the U.S. for orthopedic stuff. So, and one of our staunch listeners got it done on his knee and claims that his knee has not felt better in 20 years. He actually can't walk and stuff again. It evidently regenerates stuff. That's what stem cells do. But
I'd be interested in that because, you know, I'm still all original parts, but, you know, that day could come, and if I don't have it replaced, I can just have it regenerated.
My chiropractor, the guy from Dr. Miller from the guy we do the commercials on the show, I saw him yesterday. He said in South America, it's a lot of dough, but you go down there and they'll harvest your stem cells, which takes like a day or two, and they do it intravenously. You basically... Everything in you gets a redo. I mean, it goes heart, lungs, everything regenerates some with these. The guys have gone down there said it works.
So it's got world. I'm going to live forever.
Well, you know what? I could use a few. Everything be everything.
And I'm going to make people pay.
If everything goes back to where it was 25 years ago, I think it's worth the trip. Don't you think? Anyway, S&P futures. Where the hell are we? I'm not even looking at these things because we are up. But I will look. S&P futures are up 875. Dow futures up 70. We're trying to make it up today. We've had two down days in a row. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Mr. Joel O'Connor.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTIsecurities.com. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
All I know is if I had a decent producer for all these years, I'd be in a skybox tomorrow at the Derby.
That'd be fun.
Well, you're supposed to get me there. press or something. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. S&P Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 42. It's ahead of the big labor numbers. We usually don't have this kind of a move after the labor numbers. We've had two down days, so we're
I don't know if the market, if the numbers leaked. I don't know if up or down would be a good number. These numbers are always tricky. Anyway, Dow's up 70. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 48.2. You know what? They were down. I don't think they're open. That was yesterday's number. Shanghai up 15.5. Hang Seng up 136. That's 0.4%. Over in the oil numbers, up a whole 6 cents after being down yesterday. 61.87. Brent down 18.70.57. RBOB gas 202. Gold down again, down a buck, but not much today. 12.71. It's actually up from the call yesterday during the show. Silver 14.65. Not doing so hot. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a decent start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Same with the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways all looking good. There's some flooding in the area that's affecting Gulf Road specifically in the northwest suburbs between East River Road and Des Plaines River Road. That's closed. Gulf Road is closed there because of flooding. We've had lots of rain, and it looks like next week it's not going to get any better. It's going to be cold and rainy pretty much every day next week, according to early looks at the forecast. So this could get worse, but right now it's starting to affect some of those side roads in the suburbs. But the expressways are looking good, as they typically are on a Friday morning, so enjoy a nice quiet start as you're heading in this morning. Weather today, some clouds early, and then we could get a little bit of sunshine this afternoon, but very cold temperatures. We're 15 degrees below normal across the area, as we have been. But we should not have rain today, or at least not a storm. The Cubs should get their afternoon game in with Cardinals, but it'll be cold at Wrigley. A high of just 49 today in the city, a bit warmer inland. Right now it is overcast and 44 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 94. Right now it's clear and 62. In sports, the White Sox got a three-run walk-off homer from Nicky Delmonico last night to beat the Red Sox 6-4. Down 4-3 in the ninth, he hit a big one to win that one. But there's a cloud hanging over this team, another big injury, as their ace pitcher, Carlos Rodon, has been shut down and is feared to need Tommy John surgery. So we'll get more information on that as it comes out, but that's the sad news. Good news, though, is White Sox topped the Red Sox 6-4. Cubs were off. They're one of the hottest teams in baseball, having won 15 of their last 20. They're now 2.5 back of first-place St. Louis, who lost yesterday to the Nationals. Cardinals come to town this weekend for a weekend series at Wrigley. That should be a good one. First pitch this afternoon, 1:20 on the north side. Diamondbacks were off last night. They're at the Rockies tonight. Chief.
Hey, Joel. Hang with me for a second here, because before we get into the Derby thing, I promise less than a minute. I saw this thing about Gino Marchetti dying at 93, and I remember seeing him play.
That's a number?
And that's, I don't know, how many, can any of you guys name a pro football player from that era that lasted to 93? I can't. There must be somebody, but anyway, this is just a little bit of a thing about how it wasn't that long ago. He played 3 years at the University of San Francisco, and they were undefeated in 1951, and they were invited to the 1952 New Year's Day Orange Bowl, and they did not go. Can you tell me why?
They couldn't afford to travel to Miami?
No. Think how it wasn't that long ago, the Orange Bowl, since they had three black players and the USF team, they said you cannot bring the black players with. And Gino Marchetti was the captain and said, we're not going. And so he was a guy even back then. You think that's in my lifetime? Well, not really. It was before me a year. But for God's sake, I mean, that wasn't that long ago. And just in football history, I didn't know any of this. He was drafted by, you ever hear of the New York Yanks? Not Yankees, the Yanks. He was drafted there in 1952. They were a football team. Then they moved to Dallas, became the Dallas Texans, played one year in Dallas, were 1-11, and then they went to Baltimore, became the Baltimore Colts, and they hired Weeb Eubank as the coach, the legendary. I didn't know any of that history. Did you guys?
I didn't know about the team movements. Nope.
It's anyway, Joel, the Derby, bud. What were you leaning towards the guy who got scratched, or you didn't like him in the first place?
You know, I don't like the favorite in the Derby. That's true. Low odds. I don't like low odds. And you said you want to be there, Chief. Man, it's going to be rainy. It's going to be a rainy Kentucky Derby, and that would have been another good sign for Omaha Beach, because he won in the slop, the Arkansas Derby. But he's out, and this race is wide open, Chief. It is really wide open. And I'll just go with my winner, and I'm going to go with Maximum Security. And there's a couple reasons for that. First of all, I like the name. I rarely pick things by the name. Second of all, this horse could have been claimed for $16,000 in December. So it's a great story. Third of all,
I mean, they had a three.
Go ahead, Chief. What are you going to ask me?
They had a three-year-old in a claiming race?
He raced in a $16,000 claimer in December.
All right, you gotta take a minute now and explain what a claimer is.
A claimer, okay, a claiming race is when you put a horse in a race. Anybody that wants to purchase that horse for $16,000, they just need to bring a cashier's check, and they give it to the trainer, the owner, and then you take the horse out of there. And it's your horse. You can claim them. And a real quick story on that, one time my dad found a horse. It was in a claimer in Chicago, I believe at Washington Park, and no one, the guy didn't want to lose the horse, but my dad drove from Detroit to Chicago, claimed the horse, and the other trainer was so mad that he wouldn't even give my dad a bridle to lead the horse out of the stable, so they had to go find some rope. But yeah, claiming race, they have them all the time. You can go purchase the horse. They raced him in the claimer. He won, and then they stepped him up. He looked great in the Florida Derby. He has an inside post. He just, he doesn't have the pedigree for a Derby winner. The grueling mile and the quarter, but I like him. I'm going to go with him. His jockey's very hot, Luis Saez. He's been tearing up Florida. Hot jockey. He's won a lot of grade one stakes. He's never won a Derby. That's my choice. I'm going to be putting him in Perfectas with Tacitus. That horse won the Wood Memorial, came from way, way, way behind, which you want to see, long stretch there at Churchill Downs. So Tacitus and Maximum Security are my one, two choices there. Baffert has three horses in the race, so a couple of those horses barely lost to Omaha Beach. So, Mr. Baffert may be able to maneuver, his horses to set a favorable pace for one of them to win. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but when you got three horses in the same race, that's something you got to take into consideration.
So, last question, Bud, because I know you got a dash. How come people have three horses in the same race now and they don't have to all run as an entry?
Different owners, Chief. Different owners.
Do you agree with that? I think if it's the same trainer, you should run as an entry.
No, because they're different owners. They're supposed to be different objectives, and it just wouldn't. It's not. I mean, you put those three horses as an entry, then they're just going to be bet down too. I mean, in this case, but that's the way it's always been. If it's a separate, owner, then it's an entry. But if it's a different, a trainer and different owners, that's what you got.
For those
of
you don't know,
that's a breakdown in the Derby there. Everyone, enjoy your mint juleps.
Hey,
and go blue.
By the way, it wouldn't matter if it was raining. I would only go if I'm in a box.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you asked me about it. My wife and I talk about going down there. And, the only time I'm comfortable with 100,000 people around me is when I'm in Michigan Stadium.
Well, if all the incredibly attractive ladies show up in the hats and the great outfits and they all got wet, I guess I would chuckle a little bit. It'd be all right,
it's crazy. I mean, it's a big crowd. Hopefully the weather holds out. I mean, if it's raining, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a super sloppy track, because, they can curate the track and get it in good shape. But it's a factor. I don't really see any other mutters in there besides Omaha Beach, and he's on the sidelines.
Joel, is this track, I'm going to say, a lot of them are like half artificial now, aren't they?
There's different surfaces. That's a long discussion because the services at Santa Anita.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that Tuesday.
Horses, but they're all pretty much the same surface, and they also have grass inside for the grass races.
But let's talk about that on Tuesday a little bit, because some of these, it's pouring rain and you see they're wet, but they're not sloppy mud. A lot of them are artificial.
Yeah, because that's they get the tractors out there and and they add dirt, and there's a lot of things they can do. They're all pretty similar surfaces, except for Windsor Raceway used to have like this tartan track, and but that's not around anymore.
All right, bud, have a good weekend and enjoy your race.
Go Blue. Yeah.
So, Kevin, you'd go with if we had a box, wouldn't you?
I would go with you?
Yes. We're too old for the infield. Especially if it's
raining. I'd go for a box, whether I'd want to hang around with you guys or not.
Well, there's going to be... maybe you'd find a future ex-wife down there, you know, some southern rich lady from...
I don't need any future ex-wives. I don't need any future wives. I am fine.
I have a great desire to go.
I do, too.
At some point. And I do think that... 20s and maybe early 30s, you can do the infield, but then I think past that, you probably are starting to look at.
I don't think
but I don't think they're cheap.
I don't think that the
infield is in my 20s. We went. Tom, were you on that road trip?
No, I didn't. I don't think your significant other Jill
wound up getting in a brawl.
Yeah.
So.
Oh God.
Well, yeah, that's what you hear about. It's just a Mardi Gras situation. You end up fighting or something, and you don't want that.
Well, I mean, I didn't know. We had a bunch of. We had a bunch of knucklehead buddies that would go to the Indy, in the infield in the Indy, and that was just a zoo fest. I mean, everybody to pile. You could park your muscle cars in the infield. You could drive your car in there. The guys would pile in their car, and then the girlfriends would come out, and you'd have to flash everybody. I mean, it was like New Orleans, only worse. You know, I mean, the night before it was Mardi Gras.
It was Hoosier New Orleans.
Yeah, it was Jake New Orleans. But anyway,
which is a scary thought, actually.
Yes, it sure is. So, Kevin, we got to talk a little bit about the labor numbers, and all of a sudden we're starting to get a little bit now. This morning, the big headline on in Bloomberg is about inflation coming back a little bit in Europe, and all kinds of crazy stuff with the Fed speech the other day, and the word transitory sent the Nasdaq down like 90 points because he said he thought the lack of inflation was transitory, and people were all upset about that. And you're starting to see debates on some of these numbers and a lot of kind of where we're headed with this. And you know, it's a very interesting time to be somebody who's curious in economics, because you're starting to see a lot of new views. I don't know if you listened yesterday, but I was talking about, they had a guy, because it was hard to get it out with Fari on here, but there was a guy that he was obviously, well, I don't know if he was from the U.S., but brilliant guy. I mean, I think he might have been a Middle Eastern dude, and he knew all about this Facebook and things that I don't know anything about, so I was anxious to listen to him. But then he started launching into this economics thing, and it's amazing to me, Kevin, how it's always going to be different this time. I mean, in our lifetime, remember the whiz kids that Kennedy all hired for, that they were going to change the world. McNamara was the head of Ford.
And they did. I mean, they were the predominant management school of thought at the time, and some of that has survived and some of it hasn't. But you know, if you sort of look at it from the management standpoint, not the macroeconomic standpoint, you know, that was just part of evolution as we've gone step by step into, you know, what now would be considered the quality management viewpoint of how to run your business.
Well, the idea was, and the people at University of Chicago when I was there in the 70s used to really laugh at it, the idea that the economists could essentially negate the business cycle. That if you did this, and they were the fiscal policy guys, the Keynesian guys, that if you had a wizard in the middle, every time you saw the economy slowing down, you would increase your government spending. Of course, the monetarists would then say, if you didn't increase the money, if you increased the money supply so you could spend it, then it really was monetary policy, not fiscal policy. But I don't want to get into that today, but because I actually agree with that. But the story was, if you increase government spending, you could essentially take the bottom out of the normal business cycle. Maybe not totally, but you'd only go halfway down. And then on the way up, when you thought it was overheating a little bit, you'd turn around and you'd lower government spending, and you could nip, you basically would cut the tops and the bottoms off of the business cycle. Problem with that is when you have a democratic society and imperfect economic numbers letting you know what's happening, you end up, if things, you know, look like they're going down a rat hole, by the time everybody recognizes it, that you are in effect in the rat hole, and Congress decides to do something, it takes probably a year in terms of taxation or whatever. So just say something simple. You lower taxes. Well, by the time the thing actually gets to the IRS and gets codified into law, it's another 6 months, a year. So actually, most times the government tried to do that, the tax decrease essentially hit as the economy was growing again anyway. For it's a regular business cycle recession, I mean, it pretty much heals itself and then goes back to the spot where you grow and then you overeat again. But so essentially,
yeah, and I think what you're really saying is it's darn near impossible to time it right.
Well, but especially when it has to go through Congress. So the bottom line is the three or four times they tried to do it, they made it worse because the tax decrease hit when you're actually growing again. So
I agree with you. I think that, you know, I think the approach is that, you know, you have a target money supply growth and you keep that steady and let the business cycle fluctuate.
Well,
around
now, now you're going monetary on me. I was over on the Keynesian side.
But to me, that's, you know, that seems to be the right approach.
Well, and that's
and you know, but it means you have some understanding of, you know, of what variance is and how it factors into the economy and darn near everything else we do.
Well, I know I've been ranting too much.
Again, you can tell I've been teaching stats.
Well, yeah. Well, that's cool. But that's why I probably ranted a little too much this week about the inflation stuff. But the reason why I have is, again, I'm listening to this guy, Kevin, and he's talking about how actually now, because the central banks are so good at what they do, that we really should never have a recession because they can always negate it by throwing money at the system. And but the thing that's weird is there is no concept, absolutely none. It's like, you know, it's like when the elephants first saw humans, they had no history that you should be afraid of humans, so they basically got slaughtered by them. But I mean, there is no institutional knowledge of somebody that age, as brilliant as this guy is, of how inflation actually works. And the idea that you can throw money at the stuff and come up with a, quote, 3.2% growth rate that, you know, you could have people all over the country that are in charge, you know, basically trumpeting. But it doesn't, it may mean nothing. It may mean something good. The question is, are you actually producing more or did you just throw money at it and everything just costs more? And I don't think we have, I'll bet, Kevin, if you could go back, and I mentioned this yesterday, 1928, whatever the hell it was, before Hitler somehow got in charge in Germany, the Weimar Republic, I'll bet if you actually took the nominal growth numbers, they were off the chart. How could they not be? If a bread cost twice as much in the afternoon, a loaf of bread as it did in the morning, if you added up the goods and service at the end of the day, you had to have, what do you suppose it did? Double during the day? But you didn't get anywhere because all you're doing is throwing money at it. And the entire institutional knowledge of that seems to be lacking of anybody who's under the age of 60 because they didn't live through it. And I hope that because of that, we don't live through it again because it sucked. I mean, you remember that. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it becomes, you know, you talked about this sometime this week, I don't remember which day, but, you know, are the actual volume numbers knowable or is it strictly revenue numbers? And I think those volume numbers are pretty, you know, they're pretty much available. I know if you take a company like McDonald's, for instance, they, you know, you can discover the customers per store, you know, the amount of traffic that they get, all of those kinds of things, in addition to the revenue numbers. And part of the reason that they've been more successful lately after years of decline and trying different things is because they have revamped what they do to try and get into more dinnertime business that comes with bigger tickets, you know, have different menu items and so on that speak to that.
Right.
Remodeling the restaurants and changing color schemes and things like that are all part of it because they were going nowhere. They were flailing away with things like trying to do breakfast all day, which gave them a short-term spike and then fell on its face. So, and I know that the analysts, as they look at this kind of stuff, are saying, okay, but how many people are really coming through the door? So, I think it's probably hard information to get, and the average schmuck can't get it, but I think it's there in the analytical world.
But you're never going to want, you're not going to
really do get an understanding of it.
One other thing, Kevin,
and what the reason I bring it up is because you can begin to filter out. We have the data capabilities now. You can begin to filter out how much growth is inflation and how much growth
Well,
is,
but you
is actual volume growth.
But you have to want to know. Do you think people want to know?
I think a whole lot of people do. I think smart people want to know.
Do you think whoever is in charge of government at any given time wants to know?
Oh, they know. They, you know, do they want to tell you is another issue.
And one other thing, I mean, this is a big question. Maybe we'll talk about it, you know, next week. But when you start talking about the reason what got me on this is my buddy Robert from the Fed. I said, you know, I can't seem to find an inflation piece of paper that tells me it's impossible to find this PCE. As a matter of fact, if you go to a Wikipedia, there's a link there to the Bureau of Labor Statistics where they got all their numbers, and when you use the link, it says this page no longer available. So, I mean, they make it very hard. You can find the CPI and every little piece of the CPI. You don't believe half of it, but you can at least find all that. I'm having trouble finding a PCE. Anyway, I asked one of the guys at the Fed to help me out. He sends me this paper that some total quant inflation dude writes, and he was talking about how not only inflation, but that anyway, it was about how if I quote something from a million different places, I've seen it. It says that essentially people in the middle of the economy, the median guy, makes less money than he did 20 years ago, real income. Okay, and I've read that 100 places. Now, this guy went through and did a whole routine about it's all about consumption. It's not about income. So even if you think somebody...
Yeah, I've heard that theory before, too. And, you know, there's some value to it, but I don't think it tells... I don't think either way tells the whole story.
Well, but I mean, this is, I'm going to go back, you know, two generations, which you and I have been here for. What does the availability of really onerous credit, when you're talking about 20-25% interest... I guess I want to ask an economist if Milton Friedman was alive today. The first question I'd ask him, out of I'd have 100 of them. Of course, he wouldn't be exactly current, but he'd been dead for a while. But a classical economist, I would ask him if Matt Weber goes in and pays $32,000 for a car, and finances $29,500, did he really buy it? And I don't know that we know the answer to that because this guy's whole premise in this.
Did he really buy it is one question, Tom, but is he consuming it is another.
Well, the whole point of this guy's article was you can't say the people in the middle group that are making $52,000 as a family. The fact is they all have a cell phone. They find a way to pay for it. They have, if you look at the amount of cars the median family has, it's gone up from 1 to 1.6 in the last 30 years or something. So you can't say that they're not doing better because they've got all this, quote, stuff. Now my point was, okay, but they also have credit cards that you didn't have 40 years ago. And they also, you could never get a 7-year, 80 or 90% loan on a car like you can now. I mean, I don't know if the consumption numbers, I mean, that's my big, if somebody were to throw me on CNBC tomorrow and discuss in economics, my biggest bitch, Kevin, and now I bet you it's more of a question, and I don't know. That's why I keep bringing it up because I'd love to see a tweet from a listener that could explain this to me, Lucy. I don't know that I know we're better off than we were in 2008 just by looking around. Okay, but if you look at the debt that's piled up since then on individuals and governments, I don't know that we've gotten anywhere, Kevin. I honestly don't. I think we might have gone backwards, even though people might have a little more stuff and actually are working. It's not that. You know, and I know Matty Weber's all his buddies. I mean, when they first all graduated, a lot of those people were out of work in 2009 and 2010. They're all back working. And I know the government's poured all kinds of money into the thing. I just wonder if you look at the numbers, I mean, essentially they've poured 4-5% of funny money into the economy every year, and we're growing by 3%. And you know, if they stop doing it, then we go right down below zero. I mean, I guess the growth and all that stuff, I can't figure out whether we're gaining or losing. I honestly can't. And I wish somebody would tell me. But I think individually...
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, again, piece by piece, this is knowable. But now, how do you put it all together and say, what does it really mean? And I don't know that there's anybody's got a great model that's going to tell you that.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I wouldn't think I bought a car. I might as well have leased it. What's the difference?
Well, and either way, is it the same thing? Have you consumed it?
Well, I
And what does that mean economically speaking? What does that mean?
Well, I'll put it this way: if you buy it and it's like a lease, you're adding $32,000 to the GDP. If you lease it for 700 months, you're adding 700. I think it should almost be counted as a 700.
Well, in an accounting sense, yes. But either way, the car got produced and someone took it off his hands. The leasing company bought it, or you bought it.
Right,
does it really matter to the auto producer?
Because it's back.
Does it matter to the workers who are involved in making that auto? I don't think it does.
If they're all going to come back at them in 2 to 3 years versus 10, it's a difference. I think. I don't know how you quantify that.
Yeah. So. That's what I say. I go back and say that, you know, that whole consumption point of view is interesting. I just don't know how we figure it into the equation here.
All right, bud. All right, Carl, next. I know you'll be listening. S&P futures up 975. NASDAQ futures up 49. Big move before these labor numbers. It's unusual. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 10.50. Nasdaq futures up 50. This is before the labor numbers, which is very rare. So I don't know if we got a leak. God, how could we possibly get a leak out of Washington? That couldn't possibly happen.
Never.
Kyle, how are you, buddy? From Market Ticker. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. I'm just grumbling this week about some of the economic stuff that's come out, as I usually am. But I have a question for you. I mean, I'm sitting here looking at the prediction today is 213 on non-farm payrolls. Last month was 196. Now, this is the establishment survey, as I'm sure you will mention in a second. However, I was looking at last month's household survey that is published by, this is the household data, historical labor force statistics, the current population. How is it that last month they've got 200,000 less people working, even though the jobs number was 200,000 more? That's a 400,000 person swing. How the hell can that happen?
Well, it happens all the time. That's one of the reasons that the establishment survey is really kind of a poor indicator. And the big problem with the establishment survey, beyond the fact that I think it's cooked because of the seasonal adjustments and there isn't a NSA number available that makes any sense for it, is that they put in there this model that they call the birth-death model. And that is their best guess as to how many businesses are being formed and how many are closing. So they survey everybody. They survey establishments. And then they add a fudge factor. And this, historically speaking, always overstates job creation during expansions and understates firing during recession. It's always been that way. There's plenty of reason for, you know, government guys who are working for the, you know, the various branches of government to put a lot of lipstick on the pig. You know, leave aside overt pressure, which I don't believe gets applied. I think it's just hubris and, you know, hey, rah, 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 look at how good we are. But that's bad enough if it's, you know, if you're trying to get some kind of an accurate read. And it's the reason that I don't use it at all. I use the household numbers and I use the non-seasonally adjusted numbers. The monthly is fairly noisy, but if you go on an annualized basis, you know, Christmas comes the same day every year. So, you know, if you want to take the seasonal adjustment nonsense out of any government statistic, just use the annualized figures.
Well, what put another way, I guess, Kyle, you were pretty clear there, but I'm going to probably be a little more clear for our gang. Is that in an economy that's say it's really growing, but this economy's, whether it's growing or not, that's why I have so much trouble getting my hands around it, Kyle. It's not the usual economy where we're building houses one after another, and you really don't know if the plumbing company or the electrical guy, if he hires 30 people, chances are he's paying them by check as a contractor. So that's a 1099 employee, not a W-2 employee. So, well, in the old days, you paid people in cash. You never really, but in theory, you don't really know that much about that guy till he sends in his taxes next February, say, or April. And so you don't.
Yeah, and that assumes he's a legal U.S. citizen, right, and actually pays taxes.
But I'm trying to keep it simple that when times are good, more of those guys are working than you think. And an economy is actually getting better faster than you think it is. And then you also don't know when they all get laid off when things are lousy. But the point being is there's this guess, as Carl just said, as to whether or not there's more small businesses piling in. In other words, I mean, even if, you know, if, on the side, instead of PTI Securities, I decided to open up a hot dog stand. Nobody really knows that I'm in business and hired five people, if they're all contractors, really till next year, till I send in the tax return for the business and the 1099s from the people, right, Carl? So there needs to be some sort of guess in there, and that's a problem because you don't really know if these guys are working out. But the household survey, they should pick it up, because if you call Maddie Weber's home, you know, somebody answers the phone, you know, his wife or mother or whatever, like in the old days when somebody's actually home, they'll say, yeah, man, he's working, he's out working. So, so that the household survey should pick that up, or the establishment survey, they're not going to call me with my hot dog stand, right? A, I'm too small, and B, right, I just got started.
Right, that's exactly right. And so the establishment survey mostly works off of the, you know, Fortune 50 class companies, the large firms. There's an attempt to sample smaller companies, but it's poor. And so they're, you know, they're looking off things like, you know, formal layoff announcements and, you know, informal hiring announcements and things like this, which is valid as far as it goes. The problem is they know it's wrong, and the adjustment always tends to be, you know, the wrong way in both cases. And it's not malice, it's just the nature of the survey. So the other thing that you have to be, you know, be very aware of is that the unemployment rate is entirely fictional, because unless you're actively looking for a job, you're not counted as unemployed. So the, you know, we've talked about this on the air before. The non-labor force figures have gone up tremendously. There's 2 full points of difference between the employment population ratio today versus before the 2000 crash. And when you adjust all of this back out, what you find is that and this reflects into GDP, by the way, as well. What you find is that there hasn't been any actual growth of materiality at all in GDP since 2000. Zero.
Right. I would agree. That's what I was just railing about before you got on.
Yeah, and that's, and well, and see, the thing is that, you know, I wrote an article on this the other day. I used to do this every quarter, because the Fed Z1 comes out every quarter, and the Z1 is the canonical flow of all debt instruments in the U.S. economy, monitored by the people who clear all of the transactions. That would be Fedwire. Okay, so I mean, that data is, if you think somebody's tampering with that, that's kind of like playing with your checkbook. You won't get away with it for very long, and it's probably right. There would have to be some kind of organized scheme, and there really isn't any, there's no incentive for any of them to, you know, to, well, tamper with those numbers.
But I
accept those.
But Kyle, you created a monster, and it's all your fault. That monster being me. Because you got me zeroing in on this A1 employment. This is for listeners, listeners, it's like my one Binkle used to say, students, unless you're staring at this thing, and it's A1 employment status, if you go back to, 2013, where the market, you know, say the economy was arguably much worse, right? Okay, and you had a lot of the unemployment rate, just for lack of, you know, for craps and giggles, was 7.4%, and now it's 3.8. Now I don't care, right, if Obama is in office or Trump's in office, the president is going to be basically blowing a trumpet anywhere he can of this thing dropping from 7.4 to 3.8. But in 2013, there were 11 million people that were, quote, unemployed. Now, this is still when we were given unemployment for, what, double the time? A whole year, Carol, or something?
Yeah, this was when we'd done the expansion, right? And that has since all gone away.
Right, so the other column, the one that fascinates me the most, the 90 million people that are not considered in the labor force, whether they quit the labor force, whether they're in school, whether they're on disability, whether they're retired, whatever it is, the total number there is 101 million people. Okay, so fast forward now to 2019 in March, when you've got everybody in the administration patting himself on the back. The unemployment number, those allegedly looking for jobs, is down to 6.2. The other number is up to 95. So we're still talking, right, about 101 million people that aren't working somehow. And if you go back this entire time from 2013 down to March of 2019, one of the most stable numbers I've ever seen is this number is 101 million people for 8 years now, or for 7 years now. I mean, it hasn't changed. We've just shoved people from the allegedly looking to the allegedly not looking column.
That's right. Well, the one thing you have to remember is that the employment age, people of employable age in the population, that is our organic population growth, most of it being driven by immigration, because the native birth rate in America is below 2.01 people per woman, which means it's below replacement. The native population growth in the United States has been approximately 1%, on and off, up and down a little, but in that general range, and still is today and has been for the last 50 years. So you're adding about 1% to the employable workforce every year, and that number also has to be added in to the employment population ratio. So when you population adjust all of this, the bottom line is that we are about 2 full percent below where we were during the last realistic real boom. Okay, and that is a huge number. I mean, 1% moves in that ratio are enormous. We're 2% below it today, although we've supposedly fully recovered from a formal unemployment number point of view. However, you also have to remember that that increase in organic population also dilutes per capita GDP by the same amount. And so if you're looking at GDP and you take back out the artificial inflation of deficit spending, it's actually worse than that by about 1% because, again, you're adding 1%. So if you've got 1,000 things and you have 1% more people, each person gets 1% less.
Well, Carl, would I be right in being, if I really want to be a cynic, if I were to compare this 2013, which I don't want to be, by the way, I'd like to see everything get better. But if you don't know where you are, if you don't know Matty Weber has a broken leg, you're not likely to fix it if you ignore it, right? The only way you're going to fix it is say, boy, Matt's leg's broken. Maybe we should do something about it. Right, Carl? If you keep thinking maybe he's just in pain from something else or he drank too much, it's not going to fix it. I mean, I'm going to say, if I want to be a real bleep, I'm going to say that out of this 5 million people that have dropped out of the unemployment column, I'm going to say 4 million of them found their way on a long-term disability. They're just on long-term, and they've shifted columns.
Yeah, that's if you look at the disability numbers from the Social Security Administration, what you will find is that when somebody gets on that program, statistically they never leave it.
Right.
Okay. I mean, there's a few exceptions, but statistically, if you end up on SSDI, you're on it for the rest of your life. And there are tremendous incentives to do that. The criminality within the healthcare system is a huge part of it because 2 years after you get on SSDI, you qualify for Medicare, even though you're not 65. And so at that point, you're no longer exposed to 90% of that because Medicare, for example, prohibits balance billing. It prohibits most of the really nasty abuses. You still have to pay 20% of a jacked price, but it's much less jacked than you're exposed to if you're not on Medicare.
Oh, God, if you're on your own. But I have a question for you, Carl. And I don't know if you ever read this book. I read Freedom from Fear, William Kennedy. It was basically his history of the U.S. and basically the Depression and World War II. And I found out more in that book than I think I've ever read about any of those things. I mean, I had no idea how many people we actually had working on the atom bomb project. I had no idea how that whole idea about the bomb ever got to Roosevelt and blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's stuff in there you wouldn't normally pick up. But one of the things that is interesting to me, I've actually been talking to some, I talk to anybody and try and get information out of them. Not in a bad way, but I think in a good way, because I think a lot of people know stuff. If you ask them the right questions, you might learn a lot if you listen once in a while. But one of the things that got me in that book was they said that if you looked at the agrarian rural economy in 1929, they had already been in a recession/depression for a decade. And it took that long to make it into essentially the rest of the society. And,
right.
I'm wondering when I see all the drugs that are going down or hear about in these rural areas and the places where there used to be factories and now there aren't, and the crystal meth, the opium. I mean, when Bernie Sanders, he shocked me when he said New Hampshire is, one of the worst states when it comes out. I would have had them as one of the, let's see, a bunch of relatively educated, you know, I know it's politically incorrect, white people, you would never have guessed that they had the worst prescription heroin problem in the entire country. I would have them 49th or 50th. It just shows you how dumb I am about a lot of stuff. My point, Carl, is I'm starting to sense this massive difference between the people, certainly the people that are on CNBC and Fox Business and in New York making got enough money to where you can afford that rent, in Chicago and San Francisco, and I'm starting to see this massive split. Maybe not starting to, but maybe I'm starting to realize it. I don't know that it's a lot of your outside the cities. We're almost in a minor state of the 1920s. I don't think any of these small communities are doing well at all. And I think they've never come out of the recession. It may be worse than that. And I wonder which is going to cross over, the good times in Manhattan or the bad times in the hinterlands. I mean, am I totally wrong on this? Or it seems like if you ask people, by the way, what's going on in Beloit? Well, I don't know. Why would I care about Beloit? Well, they used to have a factory there. Now they don't. I mean, is everybody on drugs? Is everybody on disability? The thing that got me was a guy in the Washington Post who wrote the article we talked about, the Horseshoe of Despair. Is that still getting worse, or is it getting better? I mean, how does either one of us know?
Well, it's still getting worse, and it's a serious problem. I travel a lot. In fact, you've got me sitting outside my car right now, so I've got a decent connection. I'm traveling today. And what I see throughout rural America, you know, you got to get off the interstates, okay?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what's an interstate do? You don't see a whole lot, and you go from one big city to another. And, you know, you see some smokestacks, right? And you see people, you know, you see traffic jams, and, you know, go through Chicago, good Lord. But you get off into those other areas and go through some of those small towns, and what you see is no businesses open. Absolute zero.
Right.
The entire place is deserted. It's destroyed. And what do you do with all those people? You know, everyone says, well, you know, it's, you know, look at the economy, look at the numbers. Okay, for those of you that live in a large metropolitan area, all of this may be true. Get out of there, not so much. Now, the problem is all the things that you need in big city America in order to be prosperous, in order to survive, in order for everything to be peachy keen, all the way down to the sanitizer that goes into the water plant so that you can flush the toilet, all of that comes from those little places.
Well, yeah. I mean, how does somebody, you're never going to get a read on it on national TV or national economics. How does somebody, I go back in this book, The Times Were Different, where Roosevelt's wife, and I'm not going to go into any sexual preferences, where evidently had this very close girlfriend who was a reporter. And was it Hopkins was his chief of staff or one of his assistants? Basically, Hopkins put this lady in a car with somewhat of a budget with a driver and said, get out there, drive around, write us letters, let us know what's happening. And she went from state to state, and I was reading some of the letters in this guy's book. God bless, Carl, they're awful. I mean, the between the sharecroppers and the coal miners, and I mean these people, they would you'd rather be a dog than live like that. I mean, you know, I don't think that's quite happening. But how many people do we have that need serious help with drugs and things in this country right now that are living God knows where? I mean,
huge percentages, absolutely huge percentages, and the lack of attention to that is essentially a function of I don't see it, therefore it doesn't exist.
Well, and there's no politics in it. If you ever mention it,
yeah.
You know, I mean, where's the politics in that? Nobody running out of the 100 people running for president, nobody wants to tell you about things like that. There's no votes there.
Well, that's the real problem, is that there's no votes there. There's 100 people that vote there. There's 10,000 people that vote in the city, in the same, you know, square space.
And there's only 5 states that matter. I mean, in terms of really that they're in play. So you're not going to, as bad as things are in West Virginia, why would you spend any time there? There's no electoral college votes. They, for whatever reason, they're probably going to vote red, and we don't exactly know why. Of course, I don't know why they'd vote blue either, because it doesn't seem like anybody's helping them out much. I mean, it seems like if you actually looked at it, I don't even know which side is benefiting by which side anymore. Do you? I mean, even if you take away all the shouting, I mean, it used to be that the, I mean, one thing I never got a feel for until I read that book, Carl, is how crazy the Democratic Party was in Roosevelt's time. It essentially was a combination of all the Red South people that are now Republicans and union workers in the big cities. How did those two ever come to a convention together and not have a big brawl, or did they?
Well, there was a fair bit of brawling, but it's funny that Democrats today all try to cast the Republicans as the ones that are, you know, the horrid racists and this and that. The truth is something entirely different. If you go back and you look at history, I mean, you know, what was his title before it was senator? I seem to be having a little bit of a brain block here, but I think I can remember it. I think it started with a K.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all that stuff flipped with the Civil Rights Bill, right?
And interestingly enough, it was the Republicans that passed it.
Yeah. It's,
and so it's, you know, there's an awful lot of revisionism that goes on in D.C., but there's also a lot of clown showing that goes on in D.C. But when it comes to the five states, be very careful what you wish for. You know, there's a lot of people running around talking about doing things like getting rid of the Electoral College and stuff like this. You do that, and you essentially have declared that unless you live in a large metropolitan area of over 2 million people, you don't have a vote. You've lost the franchise. And at that point, I'm not sure that the people that make all of that stuff that makes it possible for your toilet to flush are going to keep bringing it to your town.
I would see what you think about this, Carl, because I know you're politically a lot righter than me, but positioned right, not necessarily correct. I would go with the Nebraska model for a while. We're still an electoral college, but every congressional district gets one elector.
Yeah, I kind of like that sort of design. You need to have representation outside of major metropolitan areas. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Except, I think it's gone. If you start piling on one to the other, I think it's gone way too far. Because I have a piece of paper here, and it's talking about tyranny of the minority. And I really don't have the Electoral College. You know what, Carl? I can live with it. I don't have a. What I don't like about it is in certain states, and people continually, well, let me start here. I think that really when people in their heart of hearts, they really want their vote to count more than somebody else. Right? And it's an instinct we all have. I mean, I own a business. I've employed people, not as many as I'd like, and, you know, the business maybe should be bigger after these years. I should have 50 branches, and we only got a couple. But fact is, we've done pretty well. And my feeling is that I've been a net plus on society. And if a bus comes out of either Inglewood or the mountains of West Virginia with 40 people on them, and everybody gets $10 to walk into the polling place, I guess instinctively I'm feeling maybe my vote should count a little more than that because I put a little bit more into it. Okay, I mean, you're going to have that instinct. Then you have to say, wait a minute. Once you start going down that road, you start apportioning some people to give more their votes or more than somebody else. You know, then that's a problem. And I don't want to go there either. You know, so you got to take the good with the bad when things like that happen. But I also think that in Illinois or Wyoming or someplace, the idea that why should I even walk down the block? This one, the way it's set up. You know, there's no incentive for a Democrat to get another 100,000 votes out of Illinois, or a Republican to get another 40,000 votes out of Wyoming. And I think that's wrong, Carl. Somehow or another, we've gone, and then if you take the Senate side, where clearly a senator, and Maddie had the statistics once, it's like 65,000 people elect a senator in Wyoming. You know, how many, it's like 20 million or 15 million elect a senator in California. And now those people, the minority gets into Congress, I can even live with that for a while. But then if they start pounding in, 200 judges that are there for a lifetime, this is starting to pile on to me. I mean, we're starting to get to the point where an awful lot of the movers and shakers are now coming from this somewhat minority to start with. And I'm sure one year, someday it's going to be the Democrats, and they're not going to like that either. And because now I'm in the middle, but I think they're pushing it too far. You know, where we're going to get all our judges in for, if you cut the judge terms down to 15 years, then I really don't have a problem with that either, Carl. But right now, the way it's set up, if you pile the judgeships on top of the Electoral College, on top of the idea that the senators, you get two states, if your Senate's the size of Liechtenstein and two senators if it's the size of Russia, you know, it starts to pile on a little bit. Am I all wrong or not?
No, I think you're right. But on the other hand, you have to remember that this isn't exactly a new problem. FDR even went so far as to threaten to pack the Supreme Court. So, you know, and of course that threat has come back now recently, too. It's starting to show up again. You've got Democrats that are saying that that's one of their priorities if they get the White House back. And so, you know, this kind of gerrymandering, I think the real issue is that we're not supposed to be a democracy. We're supposed to be a constitutional republic, which means that there are things that the government is just simply not allowed to do. And that's, by the way, most of it. Okay? The government has a list of enumerated powers, and everything else, they're supposed to bugger off. Now, of course, they don't. My opinion is we ought to start looking there and fixing that, because whether it's on the left side of the aisle or the right side of the aisle, if you end up with half the country mad enough to do something nasty about it, you've got 535 people in Congress, and you've got 330 million Americans. If 150 million of them are mad, what percentage of those people are, A, not insane, and therefore not going to run around on Facebook or Twitter or whatever, you know, screaming that they're going to go do blah, 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 whatever that is? Number two, have some sort of training, which our government was kind enough to give them in exchange for signing away part of their life in many cases. And number three, or more some combination of these, are just extremely cunning people.
All right, Carl, 263 is the number. Unemployment rate, 3.6%. You haven't had a whole lot of time to digest that, but...
that's not a terribly surprising number. I'm going to have to dig around the inside of it. It'll take me a little while, but there'll be an article out. Give me about 15 or 20 minutes. I just got to get online and do it.
Well, we'll have you back next week. Talk about, finish your point. I guess I don't understand. I know someday it'll swing back the other way, but the idea that there's you know, you and I can look at, you know, 20 states and say it doesn't matter who the Republicans put up or the Democrats put up, they're going to win these 20 states. Don't even worry about them. Now, obviously, if you pick the wrong states like Hillary, you could screw up. But by and large, I think the people in Wyoming actually think they deserve eight times the vote as the people in California. Like guns and horses should count for votes or something. I don't know. I mean, you reach the point where you think you're entitled to it. And I don't know why that is. I mean, I don't know how much further it can go before we have to do something. I would like to see more states do the Nebraska model.
I think the only real model that works fundamentally is for the people on both sides to be willing to go back to the boundaries that they're supposed to stay within. But I don't see that happening.
Oh no, God no! I mean, there has to be so much money in play, because to me, Carl, I don't know if this is a bad thing about my personality or maybe my University of Chicago education, but everything comes back to money. I mean, like I said, I was always more influenced by George Stigler than I ever was by Milton Friedman. I really talk Friedman more because we're talking money supply these days more than we are other stuff. But behavioral economy, to me, economics is a spectacular science, to where, you know, if you see the money, you can predict the actions. You can't necessarily predict, you know, the GDP. You can't put everything that people always rag on economists about. But you can look at, for instance, you can look at Cabrini Green in Chicago and say, wow, look at all those black people living in a spot that now all of a sudden is prime real estate. And you can say 10 years from now, somehow they're not going to be here. I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't know who's going to do it. I don't know what's going to. And sure enough, 10 years later, they weren't there. You know, I mean, there's always the money has a way to push. You know, if all of a sudden people in the north side were Hispanic neighborhoods and somebody decided, hey, they're right next to an L stop, all these people want to live in the city these days, why don't we bid these prices up and get these people the hell out of here? Guess what, Carl? It happened. You know, I mean, you can't predict the timing. You can't predict the price. You know, whatever, but you can certainly predict the outcome, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, no. I think you're absolutely right, and that's one of the biggest problems you have with, you know, any sort of representative government, any sort of Republican government, representative Republican government as opposed to democracy, is that as soon as you allow people to vote themselves a check, that's exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, and they are.
And by the way, that's not just individuals either. You get corporations that vote themselves a check indirectly by, you know, I mean, it comes from all sides. It comes from the labor unions. It comes from the businesses. It comes from Amazon. It comes from everywhere. And the corruption level, all driven by cash, gets insane almost immediately.
Well, they had next time you're on, Carl, I'm going to talk a little bit about this Republican guy. And, you know, I love a conservative, you know, whatever. And he looked like he came out of central conservative casting. You know, guy, totally ripped body, you know, in a suit. You can see the guy was in tip-top shape, the crew cut. Looked like something, and he starts marching on about business and how great business is and how it's the capitalist system and it's a free market, this and that. And I'm sitting there going, buddy, you need to look in a mirror. I can't name four industries that actually are competitive today. Every one of the industries he's talking about is their nose so far up the ass of government that it is somewhat socialistic already because they're preferenced on everything. You can't break into those industries with a crowbar. And he's talking about this being the competitive capitalist system. Is he out of his mind? Or is he not looking? I don't get it.
Well, no, he's getting paid off. What do you think?
Well, we're going to have you back on, Bud, because we didn't cover a lot of stuff in these labor numbers. I'm not going to get your full analysis after a minute and a half, so we'll have you back next week. S&P Futures, we were down from, we were up 10, went down up 8, now we're up 12. So I think, by and large, people like the numbers. NASDAQ Futures up 46. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right
now. Right here, right now. Right now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Mel Weber. SP futures are up 13 and a quarter. We're celebrating this job report. As the futures up 55, we got the Dow up 106. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 52 now, 0.4%. FTSE up 57.8. CAC around up 15.3. We should have been long today because we had 2 days down. And there's no way you're going to have more than 2 days down. We got oil up 27 cents now. That's 0.4%, so 62.08. Brent 70.80 up 5 cents. RBOB gas 202. And we got gold down $1.40. Silver up 4 cents. We'll come back. Talk about these numbers because I got this page up again. I'm fascinated by this stuff now, man. You're gonna have to explain this to me. You're better at numbers now that you're younger. What do you got for us, Travis, with other sports?
42 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic starting to build on the Edens and Kennedy, but still looking pretty good on a Friday morning, about 50 minutes from O'Hare into downtown. No accidents to report. Same with the Eisenhower. Traffic volumes growing, but no accidents. Stevenson looks good. Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford have been quiet all morning, as we typically have lighter traffic on Friday mornings. A lot of people seem to work from home or take long weekends on Fridays, and that affects the traffic. The issue in the area is lots of flooding, especially in the outlying areas, like around Orland Park. We have several closures due to flooding. 135th Street between Harlem and Ridgeland Avenue is closed. Southwest Highway between 135th and 131st is closed.
Audrey's, you can't get out of her place two directions.
Yeah, 143rd Street between Willcook Road and Wolf Road is also closed due to flooding. So all kinds of closures down in that area. In Joliet, there's closures as well. US 30 between Cherry Hill Road and Washington is closed. Naperville, we have a crash, Benedictine Drive at Maple Avenue. And then Route 53 between Park Boulevard and Butterfield Road is closed due to flooding out in Naperville. And then I mentioned some of the flooding that is going on. Gulf Road between East River Road and Des Plaines River Road is closed due to flooding as well. So if those areas near the rivers specifically affect your commute, keep that in mind, because a lot of closures due to the rain that we've had basically every day for the last, I don't know, month, it seems like.
Yep.
And it's going to continue. Not today, though. Today we'll have some sunshine and dry, it looks like, for the most part. Very cold, of course. We can't have a nice day. We'll never get that. But
no.
At least we'll be dry today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of just 49, as we're about 15, 16 degrees below normal for our highs. But we're used to that. Right now it is mostly sunny and 45 degrees downtown. We should have a nice day on Sunday, and then it's back to the cold and rain all day, every day next week. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 94. Right now it's clear and 63. In sports, White Sox got a walk-off a three-run homer from Delmonico as they came from behind to beat the Red Sox 6-4. But Carlos Rodon is shut down, likely expected to have Tommy John surgery, which would end his season, so that's not good. Cubs were off. They have won four in a row and 15 of their last 20. They welcome the Cardinals to Wrigley this weekend. Cardinals are in first place, 2.5 games up on the Cubs, just one game up in the loss column. So a big series this weekend at Wrigley, 1:20 first pitch this afternoon. Diamondbacks were off last night as well. They host the they're at the Rockies tonight, I should say. So looking forward to that. And also, as we mentioned with Joel Elkanen in the last hour, Kentucky Derby is tomorrow. Joel likes Maximum Security, who I have at 8-1. And then he said his perfecta would be Maximum Security and Tacitus, who is also 8-1. But looking forward to that. That's tomorrow. I believe 5:50 Central Time is.
It's been so long. Perfecta, you got to get them in order, right? In a Quinella, it's either order.
I think that's right. Yep,
it's been a while. So how come you aren't giving a report of the places that are in flood from the Advanced Hydrological Service here?
I have no idea what that last sentence meant in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I can tell you that the DuPage River, say at Lamont, is about half a foot away from record. Normally 6 feet, and it's 12.5. That's a lot. The Illinois River.
Even I know that that's double.
Yeah, Illinois River at Morris, get a load of this. Normally is 7 feet, it's 24.
Whoa.
How far out of the banks you think that is? About 2 miles or what?
Yeah, that can't be good.
Yeah, that can't be good. Anywho,
I drove through there last weekend, through Morris, but I don't think I was really near the river. I didn't notice it being that high, to be honest.
Now you probably don't have to be near the river to be in the river.
Right.
Anywho, I know, we just got these numbers come out, and the market is obviously celebrating to beat the band, and that's fine. But I look, this is the part that I like to look at here, because it somewhat bothers me. I mean, why it should, I don't know. But I went back to my page, refreshed it, now I have the April numbers. So if you look at the headline number, we're up, 260? And the unemployment rate is down to 3.6. But look at the bottom line number here. It says here, from March to April, we added 150,000 people to the population, to the non-institutionalized population, okay? Whatever the hell that means. And it's people that are over 16, okay? So we've added some people that are potentially available for work. Out of that group, we got 500,000 people less available for work. Now, ask yourself, how could that happen? So we've got this number that now is down $500,000 in the employable population. Okay, the civilian labor force. Now, the number that are actually employed, according to this, and this is a household survey, not the establishment survey, is down 100,000 people from last month. Okay, so these guys got it up 260, and this thing's got it down. All right, now, go to these two mystery columns. The people that are unemployed, those without a job looking for a job, all right, dropped from 6.2 million to 5.8, and that's why you're seeing this unemployment rate go from 3.8 to 3.6. But you look at people that aren't working, we don't know if they're looking for a job, is up 700,000 people. So we just shoved a few people from column 5 to column 6. And yet all day, if you're listening to TV, you're going to see the Trumper and his gang, as you would Obama and his gang, I'm not being one side or the other, crowing about a number that is useless. Is anybody wrong with this? Whether this number is 5 or 6 million doesn't matter. There's 101 million people that aren't working. It's the same number every month. I mean, and yet we've managed to drop this unemployment. And all you see, I've seen headlines all for the last 20 minutes. Lowest unemployment rate since 1969. It doesn't make any, it makes no difference. They're just moving. That means 100,000 people get on disability. I mean, it's insane that, are there more help wanted signs in some of the places for, actually more than minimum wage now? Is it better than it was? Yes. But I'm saying, why does nobody ever explain these numbers to anybody on national TV? It must be boring or something, or at least put them up there. I mean, you look at this and you go, wait a minute, what are they talking about? Whatever. So there.
Well, at least it's consistent, because in the Obama years, it's the same thing. The numbers would come out. They would be good, as you obviously from 2008 on, we pretty much got better every single quarter, right? And yet everyone would be like, "These numbers aren't real," and here's why. And they were right, and now they're doing it again.
Well,
but yet you're right. Whatever administration is in power, they're always going to trumpet them out there.
Well, how does it? My first, I was only a sophomore. Is there an extra? If you're a basketball announcer, there's an extra vowel in sophomore, right? It's not just sophomore.
That's right.
Anyway, my first economics class, the second day, the professor said, you know, this unemployment number is a BS number. It's useless because it allegedly counts people that are looking for a job versus not. And if you extend the unemployment benefits and people stay on them, they allegedly are looking, but who knows if they are or they aren't. You don't even know if they got another job. It's paying kid. So the number is useless, pretty much. I mean, obviously, if you get a million layoffs and it goes up, then, yeah, I mean, in general trends, it's not totally useless. But and here it is, you know, 45 years later, and the number is still useless, and we're still using it. Right? I mean, whatever. Just so, hey, what do you, I was listening on the way home last night, talking about shifting gears, Paul Harvey, page 3. Baseball, very concerned about attendance. And the thing they were looking at is the least attended games this year are like way worse than the least attended games last year or something. And I don't know if that, I think it means that for that to happen, listen to what I'm saying. Am I right or wrong here? Nobody gives the amount of people in the stands anymore, right? Everything is ticket sold.
Yep.
So if the bottom 7 or 8 teams on their worst crummy rain day have a less number that they announced than last year, it really doesn't mean that there's less people sitting there than a crummy day last year. What it means is their season ticket load is less than last year, correct?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it could mean that. It just means there's less tickets sold.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say that you're not, for an April 4th in the afternoon, you might get 500 people that like to go to afternoon games, but by and large, the tickets sold in advance are going to be the season tickets because that game's probably not part of a package.
By and large, you are correct, but you never know which games are part of a package and which aren't. You never know which game has, you know, like the public school day where like 5,000 kids go and they buy the tickets the day of, or not the day of, but they buy, you know, they're not season ticket holders. I mean, there's all kinds of factors. But yes, I would say that you can typically guess what the base is by that type of day, that random day that no one goes and they still sell 8,000 tickets. You know that they likely have a season ticket base of 7,000.
Well, the Sox, I'm going to guess that when they put the first 4 games all at 1:20 in the afternoon, I'm going to take a stab at it and say maybe the Friday game, the rest of them are not part of any package. Or if they are, it's...
I honestly wouldn't know.
I mean, if they are, they're the chump package. I mean, who the hell wants that ticket?
Yeah, I'm looking at the attendance numbers 2019 up to date. Again, tickets sold. You have the top, which is the Dodgers. They're averaging 48,000 fans
unreal.
A game.
How many people does that place hold?
I think it holds like 60,000.
Really?
It's an insane number, yeah.
Well, you know, there used to be a few stadiums. Cleveland used to hold 60.
Yeah. The Cardinals are averaging 41,000. Yankees, 40,000. Angels, believe it or not.
Aren't the Cardinals, I mean, historically, they have to be by far the best mid-market team in the history of the planet.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They've been very good for very long, and they don't really have a lot of competition because they don't have basketball, they don't have football. They did have football briefly, but they don't have it. And then they have hockey, and their team is actually in the playoffs. But it's a baseball town.
Why do you suppose that if you have a population that'll will jam a baseball stadium, you know, with 40 some thousand people? Well, would you say 38 or something?
No, the Cardinals average over 41,000.
Okay, so if you can jam a baseball stadium,
and that's
stadium,
in the cold weather April.
Yeah, if you can jam 41,000, well, again, it's season ticket load. Right, because there's probably 10,000 people that aren't coming for a cold night game.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, wouldn't you think that a community that can fill up 80 games a year, 41,000 for baseball, could fill up 45,000 8 times a year for football?
You would think. They just kind of had, they had like the old kind of dome, kind of crummy experience, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's just not a football town. Football's not done well there. They had the St. Louis Cardinals football team there that moved from Chicago, and then they ended up moving to Arizona, and that didn't work. Then they brought the Rams there, and then that didn't really work, even though they won a Super Bowl there. So, yeah, I don't get it. I'm surprised to see the Angels are doing so well.
I think they do good on the hockey, though.
I think they do pretty well on hockey, which is surprising because you wouldn't expect St. Louis to be a big hockey town. But they've had a team there for 30-plus years, probably longer.
They were one of the I'm going to get you, Manny. Who were the original 6 expansion teams?
I could probably guess if I thought about it. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia.
Ding, 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 ding.
Was Buffalo in that?
Nope.
Let's see. Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, St. Louis
ding, ding.
Is a guess. Minnesota.
Ding, ding.
Is that four?
Yep.
You won't Islanders?
You won't get the other two.
Okay, go ahead. What are the other two?
They were...
Or do you know?
I do know. What's the LA team?
The Kings?
Kings and the Oakland Golden Seals. Nobody ever gets that one.
No, that's... Yeah, I wouldn't have gotten that one. The Kings, that's a good one.
Yeah, yeah.
They've been around for a while.
Who'd have thought that you'd have a... I don't think they lasted very long at all. I don't know where the hell they went.
Oh, they moved, yeah, it's somewhere.
Why don't you... So,
back to baseball real quick. So the top teams are doing very well, and obviously they're good teams. You know, Philadelphia, 36,000. The Cubs, even in this horrendous weather, 35,500.
But they've got a season ticket loaded. That's huge.
Right. Boston, 34,000. Colorado, 33,000. Milwaukee, 33,000, because they've been good the last couple of years. San Francisco, who's in last place, 33,000.
Well, Milwaukee also has a nice park, and you don't mind being a season ticket holder.
Well, and it's indoor.
Yeah.
And then Houston, 33,000. Then you get to the... So, like, the top, you know, top 12 teams are averaging 30,000 or more, and then the top, you know, three teams are averaging 40,000 or more. But then you get to the bottom, and you have Miami, and they're the worst by far. They're averaging 9,600 fans a game. Worst in
it. So what do you figure their season ticket load is, eight?
Yeah. Tampa Bay, who's in first place right now, is the second worst. They're at 14,000.
Boy, how much is the city on the hook for that Miami? They threw the mayor out for building the place.
I had a meeting with a lady this week, a customer of mine, and she's from San Francisco, born and raised, and she's... Not a season ticket holder with the Giants, but she has one of those plans. So she goes to like 11 or 12 games a year as part of her thing. And then she says she even still goes to some other games. She's a huge baseball fan. But she said they go to one road trip every year. And they went to Miami last year. And she said the stadium is incredible. It's a beautiful stadium.
It's got the dome with the sides that come down.
Yeah, and she said it's a great experience. Every seat is good, no matter where you're at, and yet no one is there. I mean, it's just empty.
I don't think Miami's that much of a baseball town. I don't think it ever was.
It's not a sports town at all. They don't. When LeBron was there, obviously the Heat did very well. As soon as he left, they can't get anyone to go to those games. The Dolphins have had
I saw a Heat game, I was up the Tripoli. I'm going to say, Maddie, in the first 15 rows, it could have been 10% full. Now, imagine it were sold, but...
I've always had a theory that if you live in a warm weather city, you just don't care about sports, because there's a lot of other things to do, and you can be outside all the time, and...
Well, they're all rabid football.
Well, yeah, they like college football.
Yeah.
SEC. But it's the cold weather cities where you... For whatever reason, I don't know if it's because we're inside all the time and you need something to do, the diehard, the Bostons, the New Yorks, the Philadelphias, the Chicagos, it's just different than the Miamis and the Tampas.
Years ago when Tom Brenneman was the voice of the Cubs.
L.A., no one gives a crap, and they have two football teams now.
How long was Tom Brenneman here? I remember him saying one day, anybody who's got an ounce of brains, or they would say something that... Way out there on TV, but essentially that was the shtick. Anybody with an ounce of brain says there should be one team in Florida and the team should be in Orlando.
Yeah.
Near Disney World and stuff like that. Why would you don't want one in Tampa? You don't want one in Miami?
They've got Jacksonville, which does terribly. They've got Tampa. They've got Miami. Yeah, Orlando just has the Magic, the NBA team.
Yeah.
Well, one quick story before we get out of here. So I was in Vegas this week. And
you had the bones and you were... You'll let it ride, and you're rich, and you're taking me to Kentucky Derby Box.
That never happens. Oh, right. I always lose. Well, actually, the last three times I broke even. This time I was slightly down. I think I was down about $80, which I can live with that. That's not a big deal.
Well, you're going to have to. You have no choice.
Yeah, I don't have a choice anyway. And, of course, on the last day, I thought about, you know, putting more down to try to get back to even, but I didn't.
Now, do you subtract the zero off the losings? So in case the girlfriend's listening?
No, that's a true number, right. Down $80. But anyway, you always see some celebrities when you're in Vegas every time, and it just so happened they had the big three NBA draft.
Well, they saw you.
That's right. And so I saw a ton of former NBA players that were part of that. I saw Gilbert Arenas and Jermaine O'Neal and Kenyon Martin.
And how big is Gilbert Arenas?
He is like a regular dude. But
all right.
Jermaine O'Neal and Kenyon Martin are both like 6'11", and seeing those guys, I saw Lisa Leslie, also maybe the best women's basketball player of all time, or at least in the top five. But I saw, you know, so I saw those, which was cool to see them, and they stand out. Then, of course, I saw Pete Rose, because you always see Pete Rose when,
yeah,
when you're at Mandalay Bay. He actually signs autographs every day.
And then he goes downstairs and gambles it away.
And so I don't know if he was gambling, but I saw him walking around, which I always do. Then I sat down in the sports book, and I was watching the Cub game, and then he, of course, sits right in front of me when there's like a million empty seats right everywhere. He sits right in front of me with his, like, business manager. And they're talking, and Bryce Harper's on TV because they have all the baseball games on. And Pete Rose, of course, is pissed that Harper got all this money.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because Rose is broke, and he, of course, was a much better player than Bryce Harper, in his mind anyway. And he probably, I mean, he's a career hit leader, so maybe he was.
Well, over a long period of time, with the longevity and the amount of games played and that kind of stuff, he pretty hard to top.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah. But I overheard the conversation, and it was really funny. Like, he's just ripping on guys' approach to hitting and ripping on guys' outfield play. And then we're watching the Mets game. The center fielder makes an error, and Pete Rose can't understand how that guy could have dropped that ball. And then he talked about how he wished arbitration was around because he goes, I never had a bad year. So he goes, arbitration would have been great for me because usually, you know, the team will, if you have a down year heading into arbitration or something, then they're going to bust you for it. He goes, I never had a bad year, so arbitration would have been great for me. It was really funny just kind of listening to him talk baseball.
Things, you know, economically, and I try to talk about all time, Eddie, and I think, you know, probably good or bad. If you ask anybody what the big change in baseball was, then they would say free agency. And it's not free agency. It's arbitration.
That's right.
Because other sports have free agency. Nobody else has arbitration. That's when, if you're 290 left fielder and you're in the pie and you get bit up for somebody because they need a left fielder, you make $30 million. I sit there and go, whoa. I just hit 289. I guess I'm worth $29 million. That's the difference. I mean, right?
That's it.
SP Futures now 15.75. We're off to the races, putting a whip to it, as they say, like we're going to do the horses tomorrow in the Kentucky Derby. NASDAQ Futures up 63. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.